M28, number 6A.
So, I wanted to read you from Adam Dickey's book, an experience which he relates, where Mrs. Eddy really wanted to teach him that there is only one thing, and that we have to get free from that dualistic belief of spirit versus matter, and that matter really is only a mistranslation of spirit and not something per se. He writes in his memoirs, "One day Mrs. Eddy touched Adam Dickey's hand with her finger and asked him, 'What is this?' He replied, 'Matter.' She said, 'It is not, it is spirit.' Then another time she looked at him and said, 'You are spirit.' And he said, 'No, mother, I am spiritual.' She said in a very emphatic way, 'You are spirit.' And he said, 'Mother, I do not see that.' She said, 'You are spirit,' the third time. But he said he could not see it. When he was going to his room and met Mrs. Sargent, and he told her of the conversation with Mrs. Eddy, and she said, 'Oh, Mr. Dickey, why did you say that? Mother was trying to give you her highest teaching.'" Well, if he has recorded it rightly, and I guess he has, we can understand it. Because is there anything else but spirit? There can't. So matter is not something per se. It's not an entity per se. And if we talk about matter, no matter if it's a finger or if it's pointing at the person, actually if we have the highest understanding from the point of view of science and not just the metaphysical understanding, then we should be able to see that everything is spirit. And that what appears to be as matter is actually spirit, when spirit is not understood as spirit. That's all. And this is what we find when we understand those two translations in a proper way. So when we consider those two translations, I think we have to keep in mind just a few rules, namely that, if I may summarize what we have been saying, that we must see they are not two translations. They are one translation going on simultaneously. That's the second point we have to see. They go on simultaneously and not chronologically. That first one translation takes place and the effect afterwards of this translation is the second. They go parallel to each other. Another point, the third point I think we should see is that we should therefore should never start with the second translation, but always with the first, because the second is the impact that the first translation makes on human belief, and so is secondary. And you know, this is really that which puzzled, I know from my experience, the students in the Christian Science movement. They never really can make head or tail of the first translation, but they can of the second, because the second is very easy to read. It's very easy to read what depravity is. We read that every day in the newspaper, so it's very easy to understand what depravity is. And each one has within himself a sense that depravity is not good enough. It would be nicer if there would not be any depravity, and so that there should be better qualities, and so they read very easily the second degree of evil beliefs disappearing with all those moral qualities. All those qualities are near to their heart, and they have a faint sense that actually they should read a state of understanding where only ideas would be at work. And so they get so much out of that second translation, not knowing that they start from a wrong basis, which is quite important because it ingrains in the student the belief that we have to work out of matter into spirit, and therefore that you take as the basis the reality or the actuality of depravity of the first degree and try very hard with one's best wishes and with best motives to get out of that first degree and try to demonstrate the second degree and then try to reach a little bit of the third degree. whereas the whole thing is just the other way around, where we could see that we are not working out of the first degree into the second, but that we are working from the first translation, and that the first translation is the only power at work. There is no human vision, no human moral power at work. There is only the divine power of the divine principle at work, having its impact on the first degree and bringing into the first degree a higher note, which is called the moral. So that finally, when all of the first degree is wiped out, we have the third degree. And you can see how we really would fall back to the Adam state of things, where we try by thoughts tending spiritually upward to improve materiality. And this is not science. Science can never start from error and try to improve it. No science does that. Not one single science does that. Perhaps psychology does it, but not a real exact science. They all start out from a principle and deduce from a principle. And this we have to see. So don't try to be sidetracked by the second translation. Don't try to work out the second translation. Let the second translation be the outcome of our spiritual understanding of the first translation. Therefore, take your time not to concentrate on the second translation. Take all your love and time to the first translation and just ponder the mighty impact of that first translation. And entertaining that first translation in consciousness, then by itself, through its self-expression, through its self-operation, that's what is the Christ, it begins to resolve the false, so that finally only the true is manifested. See, that was happening in the Gospel of John all the time. You know, the Gospel of John, we have seen, he saw something about the signs of the whole thing, and therefore tried in his word and in his symbolism to present the scientific aspect of Jesus. And he is the one that would always first show the first translation, and then show that the first translation has its impact on the human. Just as those few verses I quoted now before from John, but in his gospel you have all that he would make those terrific statements of the first translation, that he would say, I am the light of the world. And then afterwards he would heal the blind, the second translation. He would be the one who would say, I am the bread of life. And then he would feed the 5,000. He's the one who would first make that terrific statement, I am the resurrection and the life. And then he would raise Lazarus, the second translation. He always would show the order of those two translations in the right way, and never the other way around. And so we should learn that lesson, that we start out from that second and entertain in consciousness the first translation, and let that operate in God's own way to work out within us or in a situation that which principle has determined to work out. And let's see the signs of the time, that it will overturn and overturn depravity, perhaps even analyze a situation in all its depravity, and then uncover that situation and see what is wrong about it, and then resolve it and establish the ideational demonstration of that situation. Yes, that's the Christ order. Now let's get on to the next one, to the Christianity order. We come now to D, the Christianity order. What is that Christianity order? You know that order is from the glossary, where in the glossary Mrs. Eddy defines God in how God appears in the Bible, and when she has to define it through the synonymous terms for God, she gives the following order, and that is the order you know, anyway you should know, namely principle, semicolon, not comma, mind, semicolon, soul, semicolon, spirit, semicolon, life, semicolon, truth, semicolon, love. This is the way she presents God in the Christianity order. Why is it Christianity? Because the glossary is introduced when Mrs. Eddy says that here she gives what terms and interprets terms there as a substitution of the spiritual for the material definition of a scriptural word, and that it often elucidates the meaning of the inspired writer. So you can see she gives here a sense of substituting the spiritual for the material, therefore bringing something right back to its principle. That's what Christianity always does. It brings error back to animal magnetism and brings every idea back to its principle. It contains, she says, the metaphysical interpretation of Bible terms, giving their spiritual sense, which is also their original meaning. So in the Bible, where we have the outcome of the Christ working in Christian or Israelitic history, it shows what the creation is. We always see that Christianity is at the point of outcome of the Christ idea. Christianity is focused on idea, not on God. So that here she has to bring out really how big an idea is when we consider the idea as the idea of the seven synonymous terms. So always when you are asking yourself what is really an idea, not what is God, you are at the point of Christianity asking for a spiritual meaning instead of the material or human or finite meaning. Can you see? You bring back the false material concept to the right concept of the idea, which is always the idea of the seven synonymous terms. And so I think in a general way one could say that the Christianity order tells us how to build up the bigness of what an idea is. You see the new category. The category of the word was asking, what is God? So the accent was on God in the word. In the Christ, the accent was, how does God come to the point of idea? Translation. Completely different question. Once God is translated to the point of idea, as in the Christ translation, your next question is, how big is an idea? So that's the third category, Christianity sense, where idea is the outcome of the Christ idea. That's her definition in the chapter on Apocalypse, that Christianity is the outcome of the Christ idea. And so when we ask how big is an idea, or how do we establish the bigness of idea in our consciousness, then the order in which we can do it is that order which she gives in the glossary of principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, and love. Why? What does it mean, that Christianity order? I have always found among the Dolly students that this order gives the greatest difficulty. And I think I too have perhaps more difficulty with this order than with any other one, because nobody ever taught us what that order really meant to be. You know, most people always think that Mr. Dolly was a great teacher. Yeah, he was a great inspirer, terrific inspirer. Had a wonderful spiritual sense, and what was more than that, he had a spiritual sense coupled with a scientific sense. That was his big contribution. There were other big teachers and lecturers and workers in the movement with terrific lot of spiritual sense, but they didn't have a scientific sense, a structured sense of that spiritual sense. But he was not engaged in doing that, if you excuse me, donkey work of explaining to every donkey the scientific sense of what he saw. He just didn't have time to do that. And so he had to leave it to his students to do that. And he just threw the whole thing at us and said, here it is, and now you go home and study it and make it your own, which was a very big thing because it forced us to think it out by ourselves. So I would try to show you the order and the irresistible order of that Christianity sense. And again, like with the Word and the Christ, we have to say, here we have seven synonymous terms, and the order is defined by the purpose of it, namely the purpose of finding out how big an idea is. And so we see the following logic. In order to find out how big an idea is, we have to establish in consciousness the bigness by deducing first the nature of an idea. And so it starts with principle, because principle says, I'm the principle of all ideas, of all ideas. It's really showing that from the one principle come infinite ideas. You see, it doesn't start with mind. You could think, well, if I want to know how big an idea is, I could start with mind and say, mind creates all ideas. But that only would give us a creative sense and say, would only say, who created it? But here we are asking, how big is the idea? And therefore we see that all ideas, not just one idea, but all ideas are principles idea, and it isn't a question of creation. Who created it? It is a question that principle has by itself infinite ideas, and that all ideas are principles ideas, which links us at once to mind, which therefore says this principle, which is the principle of all ideas, is therefore showing that we have to do only with the realm of ideas, mind. That this principle, which is at the center and at the throne of the universe, at the throne, at the center of the whole realm of ideas, you see what I'm talking? I talk about Christianity. Christianity has the accent on the realm of ideas. Huh? So our whole accent must be on the realm of ideas. And principle says that whole realm of ideas is principle's realm of ideas. Of what does that realm English grammar. What does it constitute of? Huh? What is it? Consists of? Huh? Says it consists of all the ideas of mind. That universe is filled with the ideas of mind. Do we know now very much about the ideas filling that universe? Actually, not yet very much. We don't know yet how big they are. We only know that that realm of idea consists of ideas, and so soul must come and say, you know, each one of those ideas is identical with its principle, because always right back in the order. So soul says, my idea is mind. No, sorry. Soul says, all the ideas, mind, have the same identical quality as the divine principle, as the infinite one. Do you see that? Then when you see that each idea is identified with its principle, that's soul, then you begin to realize that therefore, because each idea is identified with the principle of all ideas, in the whole realm of ideas, that each idea is via principle related to every other idea, that spirit. And each idea reflects each other idea. You have that infinite interrelationship of ideas, that infinite reflection of ideas. And you could see, can you see that we could not start with spirit and say, how big is an idea, and start writing and say, well, we start with principle because principle says every idea reflects each other idea. Because you would first have to say, well, have all these ideas actually one principle? Or are they principles per se? Can you see? So you must start first with principle and then say that these ideas are all principles' ideas. And only when they have identical nature with principle and are identified with principle, they can reflect all other ideas, or they couldn't. And so you come to the point of infinite reflection, where each idea reflects each other idea. Wonderful sense of the space, the spatial sense, the realm sense of ideas. And then thought asks, oh, So each idea reflects each other idea. For what purpose? What's the kind of reflectionship they have? What do they reflect fundamentally, essentially? And it says, essentially, each idea reflects life. Each idea reflects truth. Each idea reflects love. So you get what? You get in life the fatherhood, not of God, but the fatherhood of the idea. See, your focal point is idea, and you ask, what does the idea do? And as a reflection of life, the idea reflects the fatherhood of God by being the fatherhood of the idea, where each idea fathers every other idea, where each idea supports every other idea, maintains every other idea, provides every other idea, gives everything to every other idea. Then you have the sonship of truth, where every idea affirms every other idea, acknowledges every other idea, where every idea is aware of itself and every other idea. Or you have in love the motherhood of the idea, where each idea mothers every other idea, cares for every other idea, cherishes every other idea, nourishes every other idea, embraces every other idea. And you have the fatherhood of the idea, compared with the fatherhood of God in the Christ. You have the sonship of the idea, compared with the sonship of the Christ. And you have the motherhood of the idea in Christianity, compared with the motherhood of God in the Christ.